Take a reading this morning out of the book of Genesis. This will be a familiar story to all of us, and it actually goes along with our Sunday school lesson about sacrificial giving. And of course, our Sunday school lesson centered mostly more around perhaps finance than giving to the Lord, whether it be money or service. But the theme is certainly here, and as I'm prone to do, I had this message all prepared and ready before that I looked at the Sunday school lesson, because I don't like to let the fact of what we're studying in Sunday school interfere or maybe guide me when I should be going another direction. And so I'm always subtly encouraged whenever that the message that I've got kind of goes along with the Sunday school. And so this will be a message, a lesson that we're all familiar with, at least for a reading lesson. And so I'm going to be in the 22nd chapter of the book of Genesis, and I think I'd like to read about the first 19 verses, which will give us the whole story. Book of Genesis, 22nd chapter, beginning at the first verse. "And it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham," and that's not a real good translation. If you look at any other translation other than the King James, it will have prove or test, and to make him strong is what its intent was, not to tempt him to do something wrong. And so God did prove, I always like to read it as God did prove Abraham, "and he said unto him, Abraham, and he said, Behold, here I am. And he said, Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of. And Abraham rose up early in the morning, and he saddled his ass, and he took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, and clave the wood for the burnt offering, and rose up, and went unto the place of which God had told him. Well, then on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes, and he saw the place afar off. And Abraham said unto his young men, Abide ye here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship, and then come again to you. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering, and laid it upon Isaac his son, and he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and they went both of them together. And Isaac spake unto Abraham his father, and said, My father. And he said, Here am I, my son. And he said, Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? And Abram said, My son, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. So they went both of them together. And they come to the place which God had told him of, and Abraham built an altar there, and he laid the wood in order, and bound Isaac his son, and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched forth his hand, and he took the knife to slay his son. And the angel of the Lord called unto him out of the heaven, and he said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here am I. And he said, Lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou any harm, anything unto him. For now I know that thou fearest God, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me. And Abraham lifted up his eyes, and he looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering in the stead of his son. And Abraham called the name of the place Jehovah Jireh, as it is said to this day, In the mountain of the Lord it shall be seen. And the angel of the Lord called unto Abraham out of heaven the second time, and said, By myself have I sworn, saith the Lord, for because thou hast done this thing, and hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, that in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of the heaven, and as the sand which is upon the seashore, and thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemy, and in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because thou hast obeyed my voice. So Abraham returned unto his young men, and they rose up and went together to Beersheba, and Abraham dwelt at Beersheba." I've read that as a background reading, but I'd like to take just a part of a verse out of the New Testament to give you, channel your mind to a thought That's out of Thessalonians in the first chapter and the third verse, where Paul is writing to the church at Thessalonica, and he says, "We are bound to thank God always for you, brethren, as it is meet, because that your faith groweth exceedingly." Because that your faith groweth exceedingly. Now that's an important principle for us to understand, and that is the growth of faith. And the title of my message this morning is Confidence Through Experience. Confidence through experience. How did Abraham ever get to that point in his life where that he had enough confidence in God that he was willing to obey God's voice even to the sacrifice and giving of his own son? Now, that's a hard thing for us to imagine. And I know there are all kinds of avenues and different ways that this message could go this morning. But I don't want to concentrate so much upon the fact and the action of what happened here. We're all familiar with that story. We also know that it is a picture, certainly, of God getting his own son and actually going through and taking the life of his own son for us, that our sins might be remitted. And Jesus referred to that himself when he said one time to the Pharisees that Abraham desired was to see my day, and he was glad when he saw it. And there's no question that Jesus was referring to this incident, how that Abraham's heart was heavy, no doubt because of the great requirement that was put upon him, and he was willing and ready to follow through and to take the life of his own son, and he was glad, I'm sure, when that God withstood his hand from taking the life of Isaac. And just as Jehovah Jireh, which is the name that he gave to that place, what that means is God will see to it. God will take care of it. That's what the word means, Jehovah Jireh, and God will take care of it. And so God assured him, "I will take care of this." And Abraham saw the day in prophecy. He saw the day when that God would not withhold his hand from the sacrifice of his own son. How much he understood of that, I don't know. But I do know that he trusted God, and he'd gotten to a place in his life that his confidence in God was so great that he was willing to take this course of action that many of us, and all of us, cannot even imagine. But how did he get there? Well, certainly, he got there by a process. He didn't start out there. This is why that we see this comes at the end of the story of Abraham, but there's a whole lot that led up to that. And so it is in our lives as well. Our faith must increase. When we start out to begin to seek God, we start out with at least a little bit of faith. A little bit of faith that that God exists. Paul tells us, or the writer of Hebrew tells us, that God is a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him. And so Abraham had to have a beginning. He didn't just get here by chance. He got here through an exercise of faith, confidence that he had in God. And it came much through experience. Most of the things in our life that we are able to do and that we are able to rest and rely in come through experience. And so the things of experience are important in building our faith. Confidence in God should be ever increasing. Now, I didn't use the word faith. I could have. But I used the word confidence through experience. I could have used the word faith, because faith is belief. It's trust and reliance, and that's what confidence is. It's trust and reliance. And so that comes by experience, and as we get older, and as we go down life's pathway, and our interaction with God, it should be ever increasing, because I can guarantee you, almost guarantee you, that the troubles of life will come upon us all, and as we get further down the road, sometimes those troubles and those tests and those trials can be harder and harder. And I don't believe that God gives us more than we're able to bear, but in the giving of those trials to us, It's to increase our faith. It's to increase our confidence in Him. And so I believe that that faith itself, salvation itself, which is eternal life, and if you've been saved, you have life, because that's what salvation is. It is eternal life, life with God. And that very life itself has a tendency to grow. I mean, you take something out here. We're in the spring of the year right now, and you can plant a seed as the gardens are going to begin to be planted. And that seed, once it germinates and life comes, it has a desire to grow. You know, you can go out there after that little sprout comes through the ground, and you can say to that sprout, well, don't get any bigger, just stay where you are. But you know what? You come back in another week and it didn't hear a thing you said, because its tendency is to grow, is to increase and to mature. And so it is that God gave us life as a little seed when He saved us, and He put that life in us, and we were like that young seedling, and it sprung to life because He breathed on us and gave us life. And its propensity, its natural instinct, is to grow. And so our faith has a natural tendency to grow. It's what life does. It increases. It matures. God saved us not to be little sprigs or little seedlings, but that we might mature. As Paul said, that we might mature into a full-grown man. And the way that you mature into a full-grown adult is through the propensity to grow and many and many life's experience. That's why that as our children are growing up, they're going to experience many things. And we talked about our young people as they begin to make that transition, particularly from being under our wing and under our home and us giving them guidance and direction and all of those things, to the point where that they have to begin to go out and function on their own. It's a very difficult time, because that's when the hot sun begins to blaze down upon them like it does a plant that's just getting to mature. And if that plant doesn't continue to get water and that sun continues to blaze down on it, it's going to wither and die. And so our young people need to continually be watered. They need to be continually be watered by example from us, by through themselves drawing near to God, even in the time of trouble and difficulties. It might be financial. It might be romantic. It might be through stress at work. All of those factors are experiences that we go through, and those experiences are intended, if we've been saved, to make us stronger and help us mature and put more confidence in God. And so life itself forces us that way. And another way that we grow in confidence is by observation. Now you say, well, how can I grow by observation? Well, observing how that others handle situation. David said in the 37th Psalm, he said, I have been young, and now am I old, or I am old, and yet have I not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his seed begging bread. Now David was an old man when he wrote that, and he said, by observation and by looking, I've been able to observe that those who try to serve God and try to do right and draw near to God, I observe that even in the trials of life and the troubles that they come to, that God, they're never forsaken. And when he said, and their children not begging bread, what he means is that the children have profited from the righteousness of the parents. And so David, by observation, says that this is a fact which we can observe in life. As we observe those who claim to be Christians, we look at them and we can see many times the older we get and the broader our scope of vision, the more that we can see that those who have maybe been saved, that we've been able to see them saved when they were young or whatever age, and then we begin to see them grow and to mature and to come into a full state of their faith in God, those things are encouraging to us. it's encouraging to our young people, as Brother Ken said, when they come to service and they watched us as we went through the Lord's Supper, and it's going to generate thoughts in their mind. It's going to cause them to ask questions. But most of all, they're going to observe our lives. They're going to see how that we, as parents and grandparents and church members, how that we handle the stress of our life and the troubles that come our way. What do we do when family problems come on? What do we do when our children seem to have forsaken the way of the Lord and they've been swallowed up into the things of the world? How do we handle those things? Do we give up and say, well, that I don't trust the Lord anymore? Or do we quit going to church when our children have gotten out and no longer are under our house? Because I guarantee you they're watching, because we as parents, even when our children come, and many of them will go through that phase of life. I went through it. As I've got to be a teenager, and even in my early marriage, where I wasn't going to church, and I wasn't taking my family to church, but my parents never slacked off. My parents never drew back from what they had taught me from the time that I was a child. And believe me, I was observing them. I was observing them. And so your children are observing you, your grandchildren are observing you, and they're going to learn about confidence in the Lord by the way that we live our lives and the example we set before them. Well, I got to move on before I run out of time. So those are just facts of the way that our confidence increases. But I want to talk a little bit about Abraham's journey. How did he get all the way out there where that he was willing to sacrifice his son? A most difficult thing. Well, it started like all of us have a beginning. Abraham had a beginning. It starts telling us a little bit about Abraham all the way back in the 11th chapter of the book of Genesis. And I'm not going to go read all this. I'm going to paraphrase a lot of it for time's sake. But it gives us in the 11th chapter, it gives us a chronology of families. Abraham was the 10th generation from the time that Noah and his three sons, Ham, Shem, and Japheth, had landed on this side of the flood. They had come through the flood, and you all know the story of that. But it gives us the family history of Abraham. And if you count the generations from Shem down to Abraham, you'll see it was 10 generations. And it even gives the ages of those who were in that lineage. And it was roughly 375 to 400 years from the time that Ham, Shem, and Japheth, along with their father Noah, had landed this side of the flood. And we know that all things living were destroyed except that family, those eight souls that were in that ark. And so from that beginning, there were three lines that developed, the line of Japheth and the line of Ham and also the line of Shem. And it was down through the line of Shem that Abraham came in. And it gives the lineage. And it was roughly 375 years before Abraham was born. But you know what's interesting about that? Shem was still living. Shem was still living. He lived, the Bible tells us, 500 years after that he begat the first son after the flood. And so Abraham, then very much likelihood, spoke with his grandfather Shem and got first-hand account from him. And I'm sure that Shem was the leader of his family, taught them about God, taught them what that God had done in the destroying of this world. All of those things began to make an impression upon Abraham. And so we can follow that lineage down and we can find Abraham descended. And when the time came, God called Abraham. And so we have a little bit of the call of Abraham. And that's in the 12th chapter, beginning at the first verse. And it tells us, I think I will read that. In the 12th chapter, beginning at the first verse, it tells us, it runs quickly from the 11th chapter, it runs quickly over the lineage of Abraham and gets down to Abraham because he's the important character that God wants us to understand about. Now, that doesn't mean that all of his ancestors didn't know God. It doesn't mean that his father, grandfather, great-grandfather, who all of them were living, all of them were living at that time, because the age didn't start coming to below 100 until well after that. And so he had a relationship with them. And I'm sure that it was a strong family. And I believe he'd been taught about God. And so he had some introduction to those things. I believe that was the beginning of his faith. But it tells us in the 12th chapter, "Now the Lord had said unto Abraham, get thee out of thy country, and from thy kindred, and from thy father's house, unto a land that I will show thee." Now that must have been a difficult thing for him to do, because here he was, 10th generation, and they all lived in ever how big of a community, I'm sure that it was. Perhaps some had gone out here, there, and yonder, but Abraham, it appears, was still pretty much in the land of his forefathers, and was there. But God had called him. And he said, "And I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee, and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse them that curseth thee. And in thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed." So Abraham departed, as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot with him. And Abraham was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. He was not a young man. He was 75 years old. And so Abraham's history was that he was introduced to the knowledge of God. But when the time came in his life that God had something for him to do, that Abraham got a calling when he was 75 years old. And it came while that he perhaps had never had a personal calling from God. But here he did. At this time he did. And he obeyed that voice. And it says that the calling came to him personally. God said to Abraham. And that, folks, we're brought up in church, most of us. But at some point along the way, we learn about God. We learn that to come and begin to acknowledge him and learn about him. That's the beginning of faith. Faith is a process. You don't just get faith, I don't believe, just instantaneous. I don't believe that faith is something that supersedes our knowledge and our mind. I believe that we come to faith through introduction and experience. And that's what we're going to find out about Abraham. He knew about God. He'd been taught about God. I don't know what all the neighbors were doing. I don't know how much sin and strife and misery might have been in that country. If you look to where they were in what we would call Syria, is the area that they were in. And so that's where he was brought up, in that area that we call Syria now. And so there come a point in his life, and he was 75 years old, when God spoke to him personally. He said, "Abraham, I got something for you to do." And so Abraham got that call from God. And I believe that every single one of us will get a call from God at some point. Because the acknowledgement of the existence of God is the beginning of wisdom. But not everybody honors that call. Many will run and go the other direction. But Abraham didn't do that. Abraham heard the call, and he got up, and he went, and he began to follow God. And so all of those things were the beginning of Abraham's faith to bring him to a stronger reliance upon God. Now, there's other things that we learn about Abraham. And that is that has not been an easy journey for him. He was just like us. He had problems. He made mistakes. He did the wrong things from time to time. And all of those things served as experiences to help him I believe, to become stronger. There's not a one of us that hasn't made a wrong choice. Even if we've been saved, we've made wrong choices, we've told lies, we've done things, but hopefully we've learned from those things. Hopefully that in our error, we have been exposed to the chastening of God, and we've gotten stronger and brought closer to God. That's what should happen. Abraham began the journey. It tells us in verse 5 of that chapter that I read in the 12th chapter that he got up and he went. And so he honored the call. And that's got to be the first thing, is that we've got to go, be willing to go. If we're not willing to go, God can't save us. God can't lead us to the place where he wants to. We've got to be willing to go. And so he got up and he went. But in the way, he experienced difficulty. Now, what was the difficulty that he experienced? Well, what had God promised him? God had promised him, I'm going to make you a blessing to all of the earth, but I'm also going to give you a possession. I'm going to take you to a land that I will give you. And so Abraham began to follow him. And as he got there, it tells us that he got into the land, in the fifth verse, I believe it is, of the 12th chapter. Yeah. And they went forth to go into the land of Canaan, and into the land of the Canaan they came. And Abraham passed through the land into the place of Shechem, unto the plain of Moriah, and the Canaanite was then in the land. And so Abraham gets there, and guess what? The land is already occupied. And no doubt he was confused. No doubt he couldn't figure out what was going on, because God had said, I'm going to take you to a place that I'm going to give you. And he gets there and the place is already occupied. And no doubt it caused Abraham to perhaps wonder and not quite understand what God was going to do, because I believe he was a lot like us. He expects everything instantaneous. He thought, well, it's just going to be right there. And when I get there, it'll be ready for me. But that wasn't God's plan. God's plan was to give it to Abraham and to his descendants, but he couldn't do it right then. And so I believe that that as he ran into those difficulties, God assured him. In the sixth verse, seventh verse, God assured him that he was going to give that land to him. And so then it tells us that Abraham made an altar, and there he worshiped God. And there he served God. And so what did he do? He got disappointment. He had a difficulty in his life, but he didn't give up. He continued to draw near to God, and it says that he continued his journey on south. He continued to follow God, even though that he was discouraged when he got to where that was going to be his, that it was occupied. But he was determined to continue to follow God. Well, in the course of this, Abraham did what we might call backsliding. Because this is part of his history. This is part of what experiences helped Abraham to become reliant upon God and to become confident in God. The Bible tells us in the 13th chapter, or I'm sorry, in the beginning of the 10th verse of the 12th chapter, it says that there was a great famine that came on the land. Now, a famine in those times was pretty difficult. That was a pretty bad trial because, they couldn't just go down to the grocery store and get what they needed to eat. And so when there was no food, everybody was going hungry. The animals were going hungry. And so it was a bad time. And Abraham, in order to escape the famine, took his wife and Lot and all that he had, and he had accumulated quite a bit. He was a very wealthy man, and it says that he went down into Egypt. He went down on further down. If you look at the map, you'll see that Syria is up here, and it says that he went south and began to follow God, and he followed God and down into the lands of the Canaanites, which later became Israel's land, where Israel is. But it says that he went and followed him south and went on down into Egypt, and so he had to go down and around and over into where Egypt is. And as he got over there into Egypt, there were some things that happened. Abraham backslid. He no longer had the confidence in God that it seemed to have when he first left Haran. He seemed to have backslidden. I don't know about any of you, But I've backslidden from time to time. There's been many cases in my life where that I didn't have the confidence in God. I backslid when I was a teenager and a young adult. And there's been times even since I started preaching that I've backslidden. I've tried to throw my Bible away and quit. There's been times that that I laid out of church, which was all the wrong thing to do. And you know what happened? Every time I did that, I got in trouble. Every time I did that, I got in trouble. I sent the wrong messages to other people. And it hurt other people, but it also hurt me. And so Abraham went through a period of backsliding. And you know what he did? As he began to go down into Egypt, he got a little bit selfish and because he was fearful. He was afraid that if he got down there and they saw the beauty of his wife, that they would kill him and take Sarah and put her in the king's brothel. And so his fear caused him become selfish and worry about himself more so than Sarah. And so what he told Sarah was, when you get down there, if they ask you, don't tell them you're my wife, tell them you're my sister. Well, that was a half-truth, because she was a half-sister, but he put her off as his sister instead of his wife. And that all originated from a lack of confidence in God to protect him. God had promised him the land. God had promised him that he was going to make a great nation out of him. And Abraham didn't have any children. And so he, just like many of us, even though God has made us great promises, there are times in our life that we will lose confidence and we'll backslide a little bit. And we'll go the opposite direction. And you know, the same thing will happen to us that happened to Abraham. And that is that it leads to hypocrisy, saying something that is not true. He was saying all along that he was serving God, but here he was down here telling the king of Egypt a lie and putting Sarah off as his sister instead of his wife. And I'm telling you, when we backslide, we will fall into hypocrisy, because we're telling the world we're Christians when our actions are not reflective of that. We're telling people we trust God, and yet when we're in a backslidden state, almost everything is based upon self in order to preserve self, to advance self. And so those are characteristics of a backslidden condition. But I want you to understand that not only did this lead to his backsliding away from God and his loss in confidence in God, it also led to an open rebuke by an unbeliever. Because when the king of Egypt realized and found out that Sarah was his wife and not his sister, he confronted him and said, "Why have you lied to me? Why did you do this? Are you trying to cause a problem with me?" And so he was confronted by an unbeliever, because you see, in Egypt, Pharaoh was considered as God. They had a whole different religious system than monotheism and what Abraham believed in. And so here he was confronted by an unbeliever by the sin that he had been caught in. I'm telling you, there's no greater dagger to the heart than an unbeliever catches us in a sin and says, "I thought you were a Christian. I thought you were serving God. What are you doing out here doing this?" And so Abraham got confronted by his sins from an unbeliever, and I think it had an effect on him. I think it did. But after it led to that open rebuke by a sinner, we also have to realize that it brought trouble on the king of Egypt's house. So many people were affected by Abraham's backsliding. And so once he was exposed, and once that he was rebuked, I believe Abraham repented. I believe that he did, and the evidence is here. The evidence is here because there seems to be a restoration. If you go into the 13th chapter, in the first four verses of the 13th chapter, after that event has taken place, here's what it tells us in the 13th chapter. "And Abraham went up out of Egypt, he and his wife, and all that he had, and Lot with him, unto the south, into the south. And Abraham was very rich in cattle, in silver, and in gold. And he went on his journeys from the south, even to Bethel, unto the place where his tent had been at the beginning. That's important. He went back. He went back. I can tell you, as one who is backslidden, that when you have been confronted and you've been chastened by God, you know you got to go back to where you got separated, where you got off of the path. And that's what Abraham did. He went back up to where that he was before that he started his backslidden condition. He repented and went back there, and he went back to Bethel, it says, unto the place where his tent had been at the beginning between Bethel and Ai, unto the place of the altar which he had made there at the first, and there Abraham called on the name of the Lord. And so his life experience was not much different than you and I. He had a calling from God. He went out and followed God, and he met trouble along the way. And as he met that trouble, the first thing that he did was that he drew near to the Lord. But then as other more difficult troubles came on, because believe me, that famine that came on him was a whole lot more severe than just finding that the land was occupied by the Canaanites. And so in the progress of our Christian walk, we're going to find sometimes as the troubles get greater, and they'll get a little bit heavier, and they'll get a little more trying. And as that famine came on, and Abraham had all this responsibility, he was like someone who owns a business. It wasn't just him. He might have made out for himself and Sarah, but he had all these servants, he had all these people. He had a huge company that he was responsible for, and the weight of that was on his shoulders. And so that's what caused him to draw back and go down into Egypt. But his backslidden condition affected not just him, but all those that he had been a witness to, that he was serving God. And so as trials come along our way, we may from time to time backslide. But you can't remain in that condition. If you remain in that backslidden condition, you're going to be miserable. And so Abraham did exactly what every one of us needs to do, exactly what I know that I had to do when I come to the realization that I had no joy in my salvation. And that was that I had to go back to the place, not physically, but I had to go back to the place where that I had departed from the Lord. The Lord didn't depart from me. I had departed from Him. I lost my confidence in Him, thought that I could make it on my own and make my way in the world, but I was miserable. I was a hypocrite. But I had to repent and go right back and call upon the Lord. I couldn't go on. I had to go back. I had to go back to reestablish that fellowship and to repent of those things that had led me into that backslidden condition. Abraham had to do the same thing. Now, I'm out of time, but I want you to understand that all of this is the progress of Abraham. All this is a progress. We're going to have progress in our lives, and many times that progress may seem as though that we are falling backwards. And that's not something that we hope for. It's not something that we want to happen, but it's our nature. It's our nature that we're going to go three or four steps forward, then we're going to fall back a little bit. And then we're going to go three steps forward, and then we're going to fall back a little bit. That's just our nature. But God understands our frailties, and He understands our weaknesses. And He never leaves us nor forsakes us. And that's the important thing. And the longer that you go along this Christian journey, the more that you can be like David and look and observe and say, I was young, but now I'm old. And this I observed, that the righteous are never forsaken. And even though that we backslide and fall back into sin and things happen in our lives, that the misery comes upon us and we may have to suffer through this, the Lord never leaves us nor forsakes us if we're one of His. But through that trial, He can make us stronger and we might have to go back and repent. We might have to go back and say, Lord, I've left you. I've fallen backwards. That was okay. Abraham did that. But we find, as we read on a little bit further, you go through the 14th chapter, and I'll just give you a quick summary of it. There was another trial that came upon Abraham. That was in the 13th chapter. Abraham's character started to come out. They had all gotten back together. The family was doing fine. But as his family had grown, there was a conflict between all of the tribesmen, the herdsmen of Lot, who was his nephew, and his herdsmen. And these were a great company of cattle and sheep and goat and people. It was a big company. And so there began to be a conflict. And Abraham saw that conflict. He saw trouble coming. I think that as we draw closer to the Lord and as we get a little more mature, we can see trouble coming sometimes. And the Lord can see, can give us that, hopefully, that insight. That's called wisdom. And as you get older, hopefully you get it. We get a little more of it. But Abraham saw trouble coming, and he confronted it head on. And he went to Lot, and he said, "Lot, our herds are getting too big. The land is not able to support us, and it's just going to cause more conflict in our family." And so he said to Lot, "I'll tell you what." He said, "You pick whatever direction you want to go, and you take your herdsmen and your family, and you move that direction. And whatever way that you don't go, I'll go the other way." Now, Abraham was the elder. Abraham could have taken the high road and said, "I'm going to take this and you go out there." But he didn't do that. He took the low road. And he said, "You take your choice and I'll take whatever's left over." And so now we see the character of Abraham coming out. You see, a selfish person wouldn't have done that. A selfish person would have said, "I want the best, so I'll take the plains that are well watered." But no, he let Lot take that. And so we can see that the character of Abraham emerging as he's getting closer and closer and more confidence in God. And part of that confidence has come from his own failure and his backsliding. And so he gets stronger. And so the family splits apart. But that doesn't mean that Abraham forsook his family. He was there when Lot needed him. Read the rest of the chapter, 14th chapter, and you'll see that Lot moved to Sodom. And as he got down in that area, he got more and more attached to Sodom. There was a war that came on, and Abraham wasn't involved. But Lot and his family were captured by other kings and taken prisoner. And all their goods were confiscated, and they were carried off, or being carried off. And while all this was taking place, and many of them had been killed, there was someone who had escaped. And they knew that Abraham was Lot's uncle. And now, although he was a distance away, the servant came to Abraham and told him what happened. He said, "Lot and his family has been captured. He's been carried off and all the goods have been taken. Then no doubt they're going to kill the men and rape the women or take them and make them slaves or whatever." And so what did Abraham do? Abraham musters up all of his men and he goes out. And he meets the warriors, kings, and he meets them head on, and God gives him deliverance from that. And he rescues Lot and his family and all those that had been taken prisoner, and he freed them. And he did that because Lot was family. Lot was family. He never forsook his family, even though that they were parted. And so again, we see the character of Abraham as one who's willing to make sacrifice for those that he loves. Now, there was something that came out of that. This is where his experience has produced confidence. This is where we find in the 15th chapter of Genesis that Abraham has now come to the point where he's discouraged again. He's just had a great defeat. God has delivered him. And Lot has no doubt gone back to Sodom. But Abraham goes through one of those valleys. One of those valleys like we all go through, even though God had just given him a great deliverance. And while he's in the middle of that valley, it tells us in the first verse of the 15th chapter, the key to understanding this. It says, "And these things, the word of the Lord came unto after these things," that is after the deliverance of Lot, the word of the Lord came unto Abram in a vision saying, "Fear not, Abraham, I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward." Now that's an odd statement for God to make to Abraham. Why would he need a shield and why would he need a reward? Well, he didn't take any reward for delivering them. And no doubt Abraham thought that maybe these kings were going to go back and gather up a bigger army and come and attack him. And then how would he defend himself? Because he only had about 300 servants. And so no doubt he was thinking, "Boy, I've really got myself in a mess now. I've stirred up North Korea, if you will, and they've got nuclear bombs and they're going to attack me." I'm sure he went through those thoughts because that he was small in comparison to all of these other nations that now he was considered as their enemy. And so I'm sure he was in a great depression. What am I going to do now? God appeared to him knowing those thoughts, and God said, "Don't worry, Abraham. I am your shield. I will protect you. And I will be the reward." Not that you have to take the prize or take the bounty from robbing others or from taking others, but I will be your reward. Those are two great things that God said to Abraham. I will be your shield and protect you from all of your enemies and all those troubles and trials that come upon you, and I will richly bless you with great reward. And Abraham said, "How do I know these things? How can I know these things? You promised me that there's going to be a great inheritance and that all the nations of the earth will be blessed and that I will have multiple seed, and yet I don't have any children. I don't have any children. How can this be? I'm 100, almost 100 years old at this time, and I have no children." And God promised him, he said, "I will give you a child, and that your posterity will be as the stars of the heaven and as the sand of the earth." And it says that God promised him that. And it tells us down, I believe it's in about the sixth verse, it says, "And he believed God, and it was counted to him for righteousness." How did he get there? God had just made him an impossible promise. A promise in which that he said, "I'm going to give you a child," even though that Sarah is past childbearing age, no doubt had gone through the change of life or whatever, but it says that she was past childbearing age. Abraham was an old man, at least 90 years old at this time, and yet God had promised him that, "I'm going to give you a son." And in the face of impossibility, Abraham believed God. He believed. How did he get there? He got there a little at a time by God revealing himself to him and strengthening him and encouraging him. And that point in time, I don't know whether that's where Abraham was saved or not. I like to tend to think it is, but I know God always had a plan for him. I don't really know. But I do know that it tells us specifically that in the face of impossibility, Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him for righteousness. And the Apostle Paul, on two different occasions, in the book of Romans and in the book of Galatians, when talking about faith, and that faith, they were saved by faith, by grace through faith, and that faith is what brings us to God, he uses Abraham as an example, and he goes back to this passage where it says Abraham believed God and was counted to him for righteousness. And so Abraham's faith had finally gotten to the point where that God had brought him to the point where he trusted God beyond even nature and everything that he saw in nature and the impossibility of what God had promised him. In spite of all that, he believed God. And God said God counted it to him for righteousness. But that wasn't the end of his trial. Because it was some years later on, approximately 25 to 30 years after this point, that we read in the 22nd chapter, that God told Abraham, "Now take that son that I gave you, beyond any human possibility, and now offer him back to me. Give him back to me." And you know, when we read that in the 22nd chapter, there's no indication that Abraham drew back. There's no indication that he faltered. There's no indication that he tried to reason with God. It says that he got up the next morning and he went about the job because he had confidence in God. He had confidence, as it tells us over in the New Testament, that God could just raise him from the dead. That God could give him back. It tells us in Romans that he could receive him back as he had to start with, since in a figure from a dead womb, God had performed a miracle to give it to him. And so he had confidence that if he gave him back to God, that God would resurrect him from the dead. And so we're back to our Sunday school lesson this morning. The sacrifice that pleases God is from the heart. It's not always the actual giving, but it's the willingness. It's the giving from the heart, all that you have and all that you are, and putting full trust in Him. And that's what Abraham did. I'm going to close with one more reference, and that's in the book of James. James is talking about our works, what we do, and our faith, what we say we believe. And what he's trying to show is that our actions must correspond with what we say we believe. Because if we say we believe something and our actions don't bear it out, then our faith is void and it's not alive. And how do you even know you have faith? And so that's the way that we need to remember ourselves as Christians. Our faith increases and the world sees our actions and they hear our words, and our actions have got to correspond with the things that we're saying. And James goes back and picks up this picture in order to prove that. In the book of James, in the second chapter, begins at the 21st verse, it says, "Was not Abraham, our father, justified by works?" Who was he justified in front of? Not before God. God already knew his heart. God already knew. But he was justified before Isaac. He was justified before those servants that he had said, "I'll be back, the lad and I'll be back." He was justified all the way down to our generation who read this account, because he put his money where his mouth was, and he was faithful in his obedience. And so James is talking about being justified before the world who looks at us, and here's our profession of faith. He said that he was justified by works when he had offered Isaac, his son, upon the altar. And so James reaches back to that example to show a mature faith that has a confidence in God, that is showing the world in our actions what we believe. And it says, "Seest thou how faith wrought with his works, and by works was faith made perfect." In other words, that in our works, the world saw that what we believed in our hearts was real. That it wasn't just words, but it was real and in actions. And it says, "And the scripture was fulfilled, which saith, Abraham believed God, and it was imputed unto him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God." You see what James just did? James just took from this offering of Isaac, he took us back 25 to 30 years to that verse in the 15th chapter of Genesis, where it says that Abraham believed God and was counted unto him for righteousness. That was before Isaac was ever born. That was before that Ishmael was ever born. That was when Abraham had come to the point where his confidence in God was satisfying to God, and God counted his faith for righteousness. And it says 25, 30 years later, that scripture was justified in his actions 25 or 30 years later when he offered Isaac upon the altar before God. And so that's my message this morning. I know I've been way too long, but I wanted you to understand that our faith needs to grow. We don't know what the trials and temptations will be that we'll have along the way. But I will guarantee you that if we will draw near to God, that He will strengthen us through life's experience, and the things that are yet to face us, He will give us the strength of faith to face when we come to them, and He will deliver us from those things, and He will be near to us. That's my message this morning. I'm going to leave that with you. Brother Jeff, if you've got a song. And I don't know how that might fit in your life. I don't know what trials that you might be going through. I know that that as we go along our life, the older we get, that the more the trials seem to come with our health, with our children, with our grandchildren. But you know the other thing that ought to be happening? We ought to be getting stronger in our faith and steadier in our walk, to where that we don't have those huge vacillations of up and down and up and down, and our confidence is stable in God. That's where He wants to get us to be. And when we're in that kind of a state, then God will be with us and deliver us from all those things that come. Go ahead, Brother Jeff.
In the blue book, we'll do page 170.